it's one thing to talk about conceptual gardening, about, you know, abstract things, but I, when I bring people to the barn, the barn's cool, the house is nice, but this site is quite interesting. It is the most inhospitable site known to mankind. It is poisoned by salt water, and it has almost no sun. But as we're looking up here, we've gone all the way, 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 way to the east of the site, and you can actually see this little meadow that we created actually over the septic field for the Barn of Fun, and in it is a little bit of an orchard. And what I want to convey to the people that are listening here is that you can actually think about your plot of land very differently than when you're told to think about your plot of land. You can actually think about it as little individual pieces and parts. And right here, where we're looking at, will be a vegetable garden because there's just enough light for vegetables to grow. And I'm threatening, actually, to actually start composting. As we turn around and we look, there's the hosta highway. Now, there are no hostas here now, but what I realized was there was a place where we'd ripped up the ground plane, put in a septic line, and we planted 400 hostas over the Memorial Day weekend. $1 a piece hostas, my wife and I, 12 hours a day, like working like maniacs. We would never have done this had we thought about doing the yard in the first year that we were in this site. And as we walk down the hosta highway, or what will be the hosta highway, which has now been here for 7 years, so it's actually getting blooms, we actually come to the most saltwatery, brackishy, horrible part of the site conceptually. But what we have is a place where there's just enough light and a lot of nice salt water, where I just planted 60 swamp irises. Two varieties, one invasive, one not. They're both okay. They're both legal. But take a look over there, Bruce. There's actually a brackish pond that is actually salt water. That's almost a mile from Long Island Sound. That's how far the salt comes into the coast of Connecticut. And it comes and it goes. And if you look out over this salt marsh, you'll see 90% spartina grasses, the really thin, elegant grasses. And on the periphery, you'll see the phragmites, which are the tall guys that have the plumes on the top of them. Those came from England, and they are evil and bad, and they're invasive. So they've been taken away by the state of Connecticut. And what we're walking through now as you walk by is a remediated landscape where only native species were planted after we built the barn, and they're sort of taken over. That's ferns, that's all sorts of small weeds, basically, that you plant and they take over. And we're coming by actually here. That bush that you see there, that is according to a naturalist, Bob Kukta, that's a 100-year-old wild blueberry bush.
Wow.
And it is 12 feet high, and it's only this high because it was completely choked out by bullbriars and other plants, and it actually took 3 years of being totally exposed before it would bloom again. Now we get little tiny, tiny, tiny blueberries that the birds eat instantaneously. And as you walk by over here, those are ferns that I got off the internet. And as we walk through here, there's all these rocks that we popped up to build our house in the barn. And we put in about 100 native grasses. And the grasses, once the salt water, look at the salt marsh, completely full. Once they opened up the culvert under Route 1, there was so much salt here that 80 of the 100 grasses died immediately. Now, I have to admit something, which if they're naturalists listening, they're going to be very unhappy with me. I have indeed planted the evil loose strife, which was for a while illegal in about 4 or 5 states, but it was sold over the counter. And I have to tell you that because it's between the salt water, which kills it, and the lawn, which I mow, it is contained and it's completely choked out every other living thing known to mankind. as we're walking along here, so these are all a part of 20 or 30 different places that I've developed, maybe 10 or 15 distinct gardens. But as you're walking across here, you'll actually see a tree, that little tree, that's my son's second grade, 3-inch tall conifer,
wow,
which is now 12 feet tall.
Wow.
And as you're walking across here, that was a garden that was actually created by trees falling down during Gloria. Remember Gloria? Mm-hmm. 1986.
Yeah.
So that's 22 years ago, 21 years ago. There were all those logs that you see over there made that site completely devoid of the natural undergrowth. It killed it over a period of about 10 years. I rolled them away and created what I call the shade garden. Then, after that, I realized there was a continuously wet portion of our landscape right here. It's the end of the septic system, a little bit of saturation to the septic system, but also rain. Everything came down here. So we actually made a wonderful, what I call the dot garden, that has completely soaked up all that water. Now, what does all this actually mean? What this really means is that don't think about your garden just from images out of magazines. Don't think about your site as a place where you can take a pre-existing thought type of garden and transplant it right into your site. Look at what your site is, where the light comes from, how wet is it, how dry it is, what type of soil is it. We have Epimedium is a plant that only grows when there is no sun and no water. So it loves my site. Where else in America could you actually have a site with no sun and no water? Well, in Madison, Connecticut at the Barn of Fun. And it grows like crazy. Don't be discouraged if you don't have light. Don't be discouraged if you don't have good soil. Don't be discouraged if you have too much water. Don't be discouraged if you don't have enough water. There are plants aplenty that can actually take over your site. Do not need weeding because they grow so intensively that you can truly, truly have a garden of weeds that you plant and are beautiful the entire growing season.
Duo Dickinson is an architect, author, gardener, and the contributing writer and home design for Money Magazine.